I really appreciate everyone's patience with these very unconventional and long homilies, but I beg your understanding and endurance again as we take up the next word of Christ in Pope St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body. When I read a book, I have the bad habit of jumping ahead to the end and reading the last few pages. Do you do that? I can't wait to know who lives or who dies or how the story is going to end. I love it whenever someone says, "Spoiler alert!" Well, these next three homilies on Pope St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body should come with a spoiler alert, because we're skipping ahead to the end of time. You will recall the first part, or the first half, of the Pope's book was a rigorous treatment of Christ's three key words. First, on our Edenic origins. Second, on our earthly pilgrimage. And third, on our eternal destiny. We have already spent some time on Christ's first word, but now we will leapfrog over his second word and try to learn to enunciate his third word. We should note, however, the Pope spends the least amount of time on this third word, a mere 83 pages. Compare that with the 92 pages he wrote about Christ's first word, and the lion's share of 153 pages he commits to Christ's second word. But don't be fooled by its relative brevity. There's gold in them thar hills, even if they're only foothills. But before we explore Christ's third word, I should familiarize you with a rather unfamiliar word, namely eschaton or eschatology. In the seminary, we learned that eschatology is a branch of theology that concerns the end times, especially heaven and the resurrection of the body. Just like we did with Christ's first word, calling each insight or syllable for us original, like original solitude, original unity, and original nakedness, so too with Christ's third word, we will use the adjective eschatological, meaning end times or heavenly. The Holy Father explains his overall strategy like this. The dialogue that we propose to analyze now is, I would say, the third component of the triptych of Christ's own statements. The triptych of words that are essential and constitutive for the theology of the body. He goes on. In this dialogue, Jesus appeals to the resurrection, thereby revealing a completely new dimension of the mystery of man. By the way, did you catch how John Paul wants us to avoid superficial, two-dimensional thinking, but rather urges us, which is really just Christ's own invitation, to vertical, three-dimensional thinking when he says a completely new dimension of the mystery of man? That is, Christ's first word plunged us lower or deeper into the Edenic origins as we strolled around in Eden in the first two chapters of Genesis and beheld our bodies before the fall. Now, Christ's third word will carry us higher into heaven to our eternal destiny as we stroll around on the streets paved with gold and behold our bodies after the resurrection of the dead. And by the way, Exhibit A in heaven is Jesus' own resurrected body. And we might say that exhibit B in heaven is the Blessed Virgin Mary's body. That is why we celebrate Jesus' ascension 40 days after Easter and Mary's assumption on August 15th. Their bodies are in heaven. You know, I have a Greek Orthodox friend who insists that the bodies of Enoch from Genesis 5, verse 24, and Elijah in 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 11 from the Old Testament are also in heaven. But I'm not buying it because I'm Catholic, not Orthodox. John Paul's first insight or syllable is eschatological integrity, by which the Pope reiterates the Christian belief in the resurrection of the body and not merely the soul. Now, that may not sound like breaking news to us. After all, every Sunday we Catholics say in the Creed, I look forward to the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. But most Roman Catholics lull ourselves into thinking that after death, the soul goes to heaven while the body just decomposes in the ground. Have you ever thought that? Well, stop thinking that. Why? Because that is not authentic Catholic faith, but rather shallow, two-dimensional thinking. This was the mistaken view of Plato, the ancient Greek philosopher, which the Pope corrects, stating, in fact, the truth about the resurrection clearly affirms that the man's eschatological end times, perfection and happiness cannot be understood as a state of the soul alone, separated, according to Plato, liberated from the body, but must be understood as the definitive and perfectly integrated state of man, brought about by such a union of the soul with the body that it definitively qualifies and assures this perfect integrity. That is, just like Jesus' body, and not just his spirit, was raised from the dead on the first Easter, so too our bodies, and not just our souls, will be raised from the dead on the last Easter. That is the eschaton, the end of time. Now, where does the Pope find proof for this article of faith about our resurrection and reunion of body and soul? Does he just pull it out of thin air? No. He points to Jesus' resurrection, saying, we find the confirmation of this new state of the body in Christ's resurrection. Put simply, our souls, united with our bodies, will become glorious as Christ's own body was after his resurrection. Remember how Jesus told Thomas to put his finger into his hand and his hand into his side in John chapter 20, verse 27? Or how Jesus' risen body was able to eat fish with his disciples who had gone fishing in John 21, verse 13. The saints, therefore, whose souls alone are in heaven at this moment, are incomplete without their bodies. So they are not 100% happy in heaven yet. That is, the saints, and hopefully one day you and me, will only enjoy total glory and endless beatitude at the resurrection of the dead, when their bodies are reunited with their souls in glory. This is how you start to say eschatological integrity. But wait, that's not all. Like that knife commercial. The Pope adds this to the reunion of the body and the soul. He says that the reunion of the body and the soul will reach a new peak of intensity and vitality something John Paul calls spiritualization. The Pope elaborates. Spiritualization signifies not only that the spirit will master the body, but I would say that it will also fully permeate the body, and the powers of the spirit will permeate the energies of the body. In 2020, Scott Hahn wrote a book about the resurrection of the body called Hope to Die. Hahn loves double entendres. He described this spiritualization with stunning examples, saying, basically, our resurrected bodies will do whatever we want them to do, and they will do it perfectly. They will dunk basketballs. They will do pirouettes. They will leap tall buildings. They will fly through the air. If you want to stand in a green meadow in heaven, all you have to do is think that thought, and you'll be there. If you want to see your great-great-great-grandpa in heaven, you will, instantaneously, as soon as you want to see him. Essentially, your body will travel at the speed of your thoughts. But then he adds this important caveat. None of these movements of the glorified body, however, will be dictated by our whims. Every movement we make will be inspired by divine wisdom and ordered to knowing and loving God better. In other words, we're not going to be running around like resurrected chickens with our heads cut off in heaven. But again, wait, that's not all. The resurrected body will also enjoy divinization as well as spiritualization. The Pope writes, participation in the divine nature, participation in the inner life of God himself, penetration and permeation of what is essentially human by what is essentially divine will then reach its peak, so that the life of the human spirit will reach a fullness that was absolutely inaccessible to it before. The way I understand that dense and difficult passage is to compare it to the moment of receiving Holy Communion at Mass. You know, on the natural biological level, when we eat something, we absorb that food into ourselves. You are what you eat. However, on the sacramental and theological level, when we receive Holy Communion, we are absorbed into Christ. It is truer to say that at communion, we don't receive Jesus into us, but rather, Jesus receives us into him. Today on earth, this divinization occurs incrementally and sacramentally. In the eschaton, in the end, this divinization will happen instantaneously and gloriously. Just to wrap up, we are learning how to pronounce the first syllable of the third word of Christ on the resurrection of the body, namely, eschatological integrity. And John Paul has taught us that syllable includes three aspects, or we might say three letters. One, the seamless reintegration of body and soul. Two, a spiritualization where we will enjoy another system of powers within man. And three, a divinization where, as St. Paul says, that God may be everything to everyone. Oh, and did I mention spoiler alert? Praise be Jesus Christ.